revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Promoting peace, liberty, and prosperity around the clock. LibertyTalk.fm.
Welcome to Living in the Solution with Dr. Elena George. Today we have a great show, a friend of the show returning, Dr. Ralph LaGuardia. And, you know, I told Dr. Ralph that, you know, this is so much information, we need to do this as installments. And the last time he was on, we talked about briefly microplastics. And with the way our healthcare system is, I think, Dr. Ralph, you'll agree with me that your job is to stay as healthy as possible so you have no reason to enter this healthcare system.
Exactly.
And
it's too dangerous.
It actually is. So one of the things that you have to understand is what you put in your mouth counts. And I don't think people think about plastics. I mean, when I was a kid, and I'm sure you were the same, everything was glass, right? So we didn't have to worry about it. It was like a big deal when canned soda and stuff came out. And I think those were aluminum.
Everything was glass or metal.
Let's go back to the beginning. Was that better? Back when we had glass, because it's inert, isn't it? It doesn't have
yes.
a film.
Yes.
You can actually
right.
recycle it, can't you?
Exactly. Glass is completely recyclable, completely reusable, and it gives off no microparticles at all. It's completely inert. We used to use it in syringes and stuff. Remember the old days, everything was glass
yeah.
with a
yeah.
metal needle on it. And because of that simple fact that nothing reacted with it.
How do we end up in this situation then? Is it cost because it's lighter to transport, or what do you think?
Follow the money. Yeah, it's unfortunately, it's always cost. There's what happened was over the years, the company switched into it was lighter, and there wasn't any resistance from the public about it. And so things went. I mean, metal bottle caps were everywhere. You know, now it's plastic screw-on caps. It's all, you know, everything was metal or glass. And there was a whole recyclable thing for glass. That was fine. You know, things were infinitely safer, as we'll see shortly.
Well, another question I have is the plastics that initiated the changeover, are they the same as they are now? You know, they tend to use a lot of waste from industrial products.
Yeah.
To produce these things. Is there a difference now?
Well, you know, there's various types of plastic. And in my Substack article, I lay it all out. I have tables in there showing you what kinds there are. Most of the plastic we encounter are from polyethylene. That's the most common kind for those soft water bottles. The softer the plastic, the more dangerous it is. Because just like it's soft and convenient for us, it also breaks down easier. So that's a big problem. You know, having soft plastics, and the fact that when we were kids, water, you couldn't buy water anywhere. There was no water to be sold in glass or plastic. They didn't sell water. Right. I mean, if you think about it, water was the biggest scam they ever came up with. I mean, it cost more than gasoline per gallon. And it was a brilliant pot, whoever thought of it, you know, but.
Oh, I'm sorry to cut you off, but I remember hearing about some of these water. These water bottles that they sell is just tap water.
Oh, yeah. It's one of my favorite shows was a show with Ben and Teller. They had the two comedians. They went, one guy is deaf, but they do things. They had a show called Bullshit where they expose things. And they went to California where all the crazies are. And they went outside a restaurant and they filled with a garden hose. They filled up bottles of water and they labeled them. And they had the waiter come out and said, I'm the water waiter. And he said, tonight we have a special selection of waters from around the world. He said, we have waters. This one was collected from the headwaters of the Amazon. And so he said, I'll let you try a little because it's expensive at $36 or up to $50 a bottle, depending on what kind you get. And each couple fell for it. You know, first couple tasted, oh my God, you could taste a fruity bouquet of the jungle. The next one, he says, we collected this from the Himalayas from melted glaciers, and it tastes. It is cold. You could taste the ice almost at the ice cream. I was embarrassed for them. Every single person fell for it.
Oh, wow.
And then he said to him, "Well, actually, this comes from a garden hose out back." And they were like incredulous. No, you're kidding me, right? it proves how far we've gone down the path of craziness. But getting back to water, unfortunately, is probably the top source for microplastics for people currently. Although we're being bombarded at every level from inhalation through our pores from all various different ways we're getting it. And so, and I'll explain in a little while why that is. The plastics that we have are breaking down. And so in the environment, they'll break down from ultraviolet light. And if they're in the ocean from the, mechanical, but in the soil and stuff, they don't break down much at all. But this plastics we have breaking down, for if there's 5 millimeters or less, it's a microplastic. If it's less than that, it's a nanoplastic. It's even smaller. The problem is, besides the two types of plastic, or the various types of plastic that break down, they've also embedded chemicals into these plastics. Bisphenol A, BPA is also called, and a few other ones. In 1948, when they invented Teflon, and they came out with a polyalkaline type material, polyfluoroalkaline, and had fluorine in it, and that stabilized it. And so what they did over the years, they've made a lot of things of packaging with that. And that is really toxic. It's a forever chemical also because it doesn't break down. And it became good for Teflon, but it also has problems with everything else that they use it for. They use various types of that as non-Teflon for other things, but within that same class. And all of those are called forever chemicals because, unfortunately, their half-life is thousands of years and they don't break down at all. And they've been accumulating in our bodies, and it's been on no one's radar. I mean, I wasn't even around. I wasn't even aware of this until recently. Everyone knew bisphenol A wasn't good for you and stuff, but the plastic part everyone missed. And that is, talk about existential threats to mankind. This plastic pollution, the more I read about it, it was absolutely horrifying.
So if this is ubiquitous and it's in the water, it sounds like it's also being removed, or one of the waste from various plants, right? What about the fish and the wildlife that get exposed to this runoff? Are they toxic to us as well now?
Yes. And unfortunately, the higher up on the food chain they are, the more toxic they are. Shellfish are very toxic. They're loaded with plastics because they're filter feeders and they're filtering the water. And so they're acting, they're accumulating it. But it's in all the wildlife. In fact, microplastics have been found at the top of Mount Everest and at the bottom of the Mariana Trench, which is a trench in the ocean, Pacific Ocean, that's twice as deep as Everest is high. And so it's everywhere. It's in plankton. It's in all the food. It's in the air now. It's gone volatile, a lot of it. Because how do we get rid of plastics? We recycle them. What percent you think is recycled? What would you guess?
Maybe about 5%?
Yeah, close. 10. Yeah, 10% is recycled. I thought it was much higher. Before I read the article, I thought it would be at least 30% or 40%. But yeah, we don't recycle them much, but 25% they burn. And that's a real problem, especially in the third world. I mean, we're much cleaner in every aspect, as far as plastics go and our polluting than the third world is. North America only contributes, I think, 28 or 30% of the microplastics, and another 20-something percent from Europe. The rest comes from Asia. In China and a lot of these other countries, these third world countries, they just dump everything in the ocean. But, there was other things that I wasn't expecting. Fiberglass, all these synthetic clothing that we wear, radon, polyester, all those things give off a ton of plastic fibers. Even the rugs we lay on, they're giving off plastic fibers that's woven with plastics and stuff. And so this wash machines turn out to be a huge source of microplastics. Yes, because they're washing the clothes, and as it agitates the clothes, it gives off tons of fiber. There's actually, and I hope they do it, there's a bill before Congress pending to include microfilters on the effluent from wash machines because of that reason, because that's a huge source of it going into the waterways. And then as it collects from each machine, each household, it gets bigger and bigger before it goes out. And that's a huge source of it. So there's little spots where we can try to make a dent in it, but it's really not easy.
I mean, everything that seems to be convenient has a bigger minus than it does plus, it sounds like. I mean, in Teflon, for example, wasn't there, I mean, I don't cook with it anymore, but if you cooked with a Teflon pan, for example, wasn't that coming off with the heat?
No.
No?
No, no. That's why it's so stable. That's why it's forever. It was pretty good. It doesn't leach off much. You know, there's one huge source of it was cosmetics. They were using what's called microbeads in cosmetics. And in toothpaste and all these things we use, they put plastic microbeads in. I'm not sure why. But fortunately, in 2015, the United States banned it. And it was totally removed by 2018. So we have made a little progress in that regard. However, a lot of the foreign countries have not. And a lot of the skincare products and different healthcare products that come from overseas, especially from China, are loaded with microplastics. Wow. I mean, they're also loaded with toxins. I mean, they're just horrific. And you know, any poison control or any environmental stuff, they just don't do it at all. And so people are still getting exposed to it. And so, you know, between your clothes and the food you're eating and everything you're drinking, it's an endless barrage of these microplastics into your life, which is, you know, disastrous. You know, 55% of it's discarded into the ocean. It's a lot. You know, for overall, I mean, it doesn't sound like much, but when you add it up, it's unbelievable. Then, and as a consequence of that, there's the Great Pacific Garbage Patch. You heard of that?
No, I haven't.
I didn't hear of it either until I started researching this. This garbage patch is floating in the ocean and in what's called the top layer of water there, the upper water column, and just a foot or two below the surface and up to the surface. And they first noticed it during World War II in 1945. It's increased tenfold every decade since 1945.
My God.
Right now, it's 600,000 square miles. Think about that.
That's crazy.
That's bigger than most countries.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just this dead zone in the ocean. Well, it's not dead. I mean, the water, you know, the plankton below it, I mean, it is alive and stuff, but the patch itself blocks out sunlight. It is so dense that it makes it very hard for anything to compete with it. For example, even plankton, it's 10 times as dense as the plankton in the ocean. And so it's causing lots of problems there. In addition to which, once again, it's getting into the food chain. They've, you know, you often think about, you know, the UN, what a worthless organization. This is stuff they should be all over. Stuff they could do instead of condemning Israel and all the other crazy stuff they do all the time. You know, it's, you know, stop with the political stuff. Do stuff to, if you want to be a world organization, do stuff to help mankind, not just have committees study it. You know, and so the private sector is taking over a little bit because there's, in a way, there might be an opportunity there. All that plastic, if you could harvest it and recycle it, you might be able to make some good money on it. And so there's a company that's doing that now. And so that's great. They're working on it now. It's called the Ocean Cleanup. Nice name. Perfect. But what they did was they made sunglasses from it. And they're selling them. It's an English company. And they're selling them for £200 each.
Oh, so, wow.
It's like $400. That's a lot. That's an expensive sunglasses. But either way, at least they're doing something with it in an effort to get this under control.
Now, is this just countries pouring their stuff into the ocean? I mean, where's it coming from? I mean, how do you think it started?
It started with the packaging. You know, we started cutting everything, you know, plastic packaging. If you look at the worldwide production of plastics, it goes up every year. I mean, by a big percentage because, you know, originally it was the Western countries that were using plastics. The third world used the traditional metal and wood and glass to package everything else. But no, naturally it trickles down. And, you know, now it's everywhere. And it's, unfortunately, it's in, like I said, in beauty products. But just think about it. Even, for example, if you microwave something, the amount of microplastics that comes out from microwaving is unbelievable. Per half inch of plastic that you microwave, you get 4.22 million microplastic particles.
God.
Check this out. It gets worse. And you get 2.11 billion nanoplastic particles. That's per square half inch. So if you have a, you know, 8-inch bottle of water and, you know, whatever the surface area that is in the inside, think about how much plastic you're getting into your body. You know, there is, they've done studies, and this blew my mind. The average American eats 5 grams of plastic a week. A credit card. That's a credit card worth of plastic.
And as you were saying, it's not going anywhere. It's just piling up.
Well, we excrete some of it, you know, but it's accumulating. The good news, the only good news is not much, is that it's not all piled up. It's excreted in all of our body fluids. That's good and bad news. It's in tears. It's in mucus. It's in urine. It's in feces. It's in sperm. It's in everything. And so we are able to excrete some of it, but not much. You know, we're retaining it. The other major problem is it crosses the blood-brain barrier, the nanoplastics and the forever chemicals. And right now, the scientists, they're starting to spread the alarm about it because it is so problematic. You know, even in Psychiatric Times, I was reading the issue of it, that they had a whole thing on microplastics and how it's affecting the human brain. It's just, it's going in there. It's affecting behaviors. And they started doing autopsies on Alzheimer's patients just to look at the plastics, see how much is in there. The average Alzheimer's patient has 10 times the plastic of a normal brain. That's autopsies.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And so what they think is happening is the microplastics are damaging the neurons. And when the neurons make proteins, that's fine. They can make every protein. They can make neurotransmitters and everything they need. When they make everything they need, if a protein or any product that the cell makes is made wrong, you wind up having these damaged proteins that you can't use. And they accumulate in the cells. And the cell can't get rid of them. They don't have a mechanism for that. These tau proteins and these amyloid proteins. And so you wind up with these amyloid tangles and these tau plaques inside the brain. And that leads to Alzheimer's because that causes progressive dysfunction in the brain. And so the brain only has, it has a backup mechanism for energy. It gets almost all its energy from glucose, as you know. But it has a backup. If the glucose doesn't work or is not available for whatever reason, it has a backup system where it can use medium chain triglycerides and metabolize them. And so what happens in Alzheimer's is as the brain gets progressively damaged, you develop what's called a type 3 diabetes. There's type 1 that's hereditary, and you wind up with childhood diabetes. There's type 2 that most Americans have. It's age onset diabetes, metabolic syndrome from eating poorly for decades, and you wind up getting insulin resistance, and the insulin sugar goes up because of that, and you wind up with diabetes. Type 3 diabetes is in the brain. And what happens in the brain is fascinating. The brain naturally needs, it uses, I think, 28% of our energy is metabolized by the brain. And so you can see it's using a huge amount of energy as it needs it for all of its functions. As the Alzheimer's develops and those abnormal proteins build up in the brain, and if plastics do the same thing, they build up in the brain, when that happens, then it interferes with the glucose production, and you wind up with insulin resistance in the brain and type 3 diabetes. And so what happens in Alzheimer's patients is, as you know, they progressively get worse. And as there's less and less energy available to their brain, it shuts down non-vital stuff. And so long-term memory stays for a while. Short-term memory goes first. And then, you know, any new creative stuff goes. You can't learn anything when you have dementia. And as it gets worse and worse, the patient gets progressively more dysfunctional until the point where they're sitting in a chair just staring and they can't even eat. They stop eating and they die. However, there's a backup system using medium chain triglycerides. And so the brain out of desperation, you can provide more energy. I do it a lot in early onset Alzheimer's is I give them coconut oil or medium chain triglyceride capsules that provide the energy that they need to help them. And it doesn't reverse it, but it stops the decline if it's not too bad when you start. And so but the fear is that, you know, that's a multi-decade process developing. The fear is among neurologists now that are studying microplastics is this being accelerated? Mm-hmm. And so when they're doing autopsies on young brains, they're finding a lot of plastic in there and a lot of damage from it. And the most recent thoughts are that this damage is causing the buildup of the forever chemicals, and the microplastics are causing damage to the mitochondria in the brain cells. And so the brain cells lack the energy. And they once again, those abnormal proteins are the product of that. They build up in the brain. So that we might be looking at a huge, like an iceberg of, you know, that would not on our radar of patients who might be developing early dementia. They also found that it leads to anxiety. God almighty, you see these young kids.
Yeah.
They are the most they are the most anxious group in American history. They're like as nervous could be. And some of that, I mean, I think it's multifactorial. You know, I think it's various things causing it. But I think that the microplastics could be a hidden thing. I also think lack of sunlight, lack of vitamin D, lack of exercise, other hormones developing that affecting on these endocrine disruptors.
Can I ask you one other thing before you? What about lack of sleep? Is that
lack of sleep? Huge. Yeah, lack of sleep is huge because then the brain winds up with less energy. And all those things contribute to it. It's a huge problem. It's only going to get worse.
I mean, I see this as a potentially catastrophic hit on the healthcare system. They already don't have enough healthcare for people with mental challenges. Imagine an onslaught of dementia or, you know, people needing someone to take care of them. I even understand how that would even work in our society. There's not enough, you know, facilities or money or even people to handle this.
We could barely handle the elderly now.
It's true.
You see all the elderly we have. That's one of the, you know, in primary care like I am, one of my biggest problems is what do I do with these patients who are in this gray zone? They've got dementia, they've got behavior problems and everything else, but they're not bad enough to be institutionalized. You know, but they're bad enough that they're driving their families crazy. They're, you know, they're leaving the oven on. They're doing all kinds of crazy stuff because they don't remember anything. And I just don't have anything to offer them. There's no place. There's no facilities. There's nothing to do. I can put them in a nursing home full time or I can't. There's assisted living people who have money, but most of them don't. And for those people, they can't afford an assisted living facility that's going to cost them $4,000 to $5,000 a month out of pocket. Yeah.
Not for years on end, absolutely.
Right. Very few people can have that kind of cash on board, you know. But, you know, they found that there's direct damage from the microplastics in the brain. It's affecting a dramatic change in neurotransmitter levels. And so that, too, is leading to depression and foggy headedness and sluggish thought and lower IQs. The IQ levels are progressively going down. It's been happening.
I'm sorry. I have to ask about the antidepressant medication. So if this is a neurotransmitter problem, you're talking about creating the neurotransmitter, correct? It's not being made or made enough of. So how on earth?
Also, preventing the plastics, they think, and it's all theoretical because you can't do biopsies in human brains until they're dead. But they think that it's also interfering at the receptor level for the neurotransmitters.
So I have to ask the question about the medication, right? So all these medicines are most of them are designed to raise the level of the neurotransmitter, right? How would those even work at this point if you don't, the receptors aren't responding and you don't make enough, I can't imagine that those meds would actually even work long term, and maybe not at all down the road.
Right. Right. Well, it needs higher and higher doses. Yeah. And that seems to be the general pattern overall. I used to have people on one antidepressant. Now I frequently have them on two or three. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's costly and you know, it doesn't work as well. But, you know, the problem is that it's very hard to avoid these things because, for example, you think, well, I'll eat fresh fruit and vegetables. And, you know, not canned stuff. Mm-hmm. Part of the problem with the canned stuff, even though it's a metal can, it has plastic liners with bisphosphonal A in it, in the liner. So it's brutal. And that's constantly leaching into it. Then when you take things and you cook with them, it's brutal. But, they, you know, these other sources are things you don't even think of. Firefighting foams, pesticides and herbicides, lubricants. Nonstick cookware, like I said, polishing for floors, all kinds of things, stain-resistant products, paints, and a lot of personal care products. But the biggest one for a lot of people besides the water bottles are food packaging. You know, you get all our food, even if you buy fresh fruit and vegetables, it's not coming in a glass package, it's coming in plastic. Mm-hmm. And so you have this constant barrage of plastic, and a lot of the fruit and vegetables, they irrigate them with wastewater that's full of plastics. So it's getting into the soil, it's getting into the plants, it's getting there, uptaking it into the very fruit itself and stuff. So it's like
the about organic and conventional farming?
Yes. Yes. A lot, mostly conventional, but even a lot of the organic people will use wastewater thinking, it's okay, you know, to put on. It's not so bad.
Why would people think wastewater is okay? I don't understand.
Well, they think it's not poisonous. You know, drinking it might be bad, but if you put it on plants, it's not hurting them.
Okay.
Yeah, I know. You and I think it's crazy, but the other thing is the forever chemicals. The probably one of the biggest things is they're endocrine disruptors. A lot of them are mimic estrogen, and that's a real problem. Sperm counts are down 50% since 2000. 50%.
That's a lot.
You know, you need 40 million sperm per millimeter as a density for fertilization. And it's dropping below that. And this isn't an American problem. This is a worldwide problem. And we're actually facing depopulation, not overpopulation. Populations are crashing all over the world. Mm-hmm. Europe, Asia, and previously the third world was always baby factory because they had their children young and they weren't educated and stuff. And you needed children to help you on a farm or whatever business you had. Mm-hmm. And so children were a necessity. And even in the third world, they're plummeting to the same levels as the Western world. So, you know, it's a ubiquitous problem and it's happening everywhere. But, you know, and you could see, you know, some of the changes from endocrine disruptors, the feminization of men, the, you know, these soy boys that are running around that are feminine and, you know, very gentle, kind of unmasculine as you think of a typical man. They don't sound masculine. They don't act masculine. A lot of them have sexual, you know, orientation problems. And so that, you know, and it's a, you know, people go crazy when you say that, but, you know, it's, you look at it demographically. We never had this many gay people. When we were kids, you know, there's always one or two gay people in your high school class, maybe, but that was it. Now it's unbelievable. I think it's 20% identify as bisexual in high schools, not to mention openly gay and then transgender. None of that stuff existed when we were young. There was very, very little of it. And from a demographic point of view, you know, non-judgmental, do what you want, you know, it's fine with me. I mean, do what you want, I don't care. However, if you look at it globally, it's an existential threat. If you have fertility rates dropping and you have a significant number of the population opting out from having children, you've got a problem. And that's what we're facing now. And people haven't recognized that either. Elon Musk, to his credit, was talking about it the other day. He said, world overpopulation is not a problem. He said, we need people. Things are winding down really fast. China even is in a population crash.
Really?
Places you never expect, because they had that one child policy for decades. And now they have a lot of young people are opting out not to have children. And they're the fastest aging society in human history. China.
Wow.
You always think of it as just the opposite.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I
mean, what about on the female side with polycystic ovarian disease?
Oh,
is that also something that's an outgrowth of this?
Early, these girls are having their periods at 8 years old, 10 years old. They're just starting breast formation. This early menarche is unbelievable. That never happened before. It's very strange. And it's causing huge fertility problems. And so, I mean, that's been noticed for at least a decade, but everyone's scratching their heads to what's doing it. But, plastics leach out a ton of estrogens. And that's been a problem forever.
Is there also a connection with breast cancer then, if estrogen overload is an issue?
Yes. Breast cancer going up. I read a very fascinating thing the other day, because I'm a geek. I'm always reading this stuff. I was reading a book on light and its effect on the human body. And there's a direct link between electricity and breast cancer.
Really?
How's that? Yeah, I never heard that.
How does that work?
Well, what they did, they studied countries before electrification, and they had virtually no breast cancer. They had one per 100,000, I think, some very, very incredibly low number. It wasn't even on their radar for the most part. And the higher the electrical exposure and the longer the electrical exposure, the worse it is. And the timing of it's also important. Because of they tested shift workers, nurses, female doctors, things like the people who had worked cops, people who had worked night shifts, and they're exposed to light at night, and the thought is it might be related to melatonin, because your pineal gland in your brain is designed to be exposed to bright sunlight during the day. And so it clamps down and shuts down your melatonin production. However, at night, it surges it, and that's the way it's supposed to be, because melatonin has a ton of great side effects other than sleep. It's a strong antioxidant. It prevents cancer. It has a lot of features like that. And so what they're realizing now is that the people are exposed to this blue light from computers, and they're up at night, they're up late. Then during the day, they're not going outside. So they're not, only 10% of the time is spent outside compared to us. When we were kids, we were outside until it got dark.
Exactly.
We came in when we had to.
Came on.
What was that?
The street lights came on.
Right. Now it's time to go home. We played outside constantly, and they don't do that now. So you have a combination of an odd combination, almost a perfect storm. You got low vitamin D levels, and vitamin D helps it's like the conductor for the immune system. It kind of controls everything we're learning now and helps regulate overreaction in the immune system, underreaction. It's perfect. It's one of the many things it does. And these kids have ridiculously low vitamin D levels. I mean, I checked them. I see some of them come in, they have vitamin D levels of 6 and 8.
Whoa.
I'm like, whoa. I mean, even at Quest, 30 is the cutoff. But, you know, in the functional medicine world, no one believes that. We all know that the sweet spot for vitamin D is in the 60 to 80 range. I like it even higher, 80 to 90. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's where you get the most benefit from it. You know, and you make 10,000 units an hour when you're outside in the sun. So you make a lot of vitamin D if you're out there. But if you're not, you're not. And then, so what happens is everyone's been told sun's bad, sunlight's bad, sunlight's bad. It's totally false. You know, sunlight doesn't give you melanoma. Burns give you melanoma, recurrent burns. And a lot of melanoma occurs in areas never exposed to the sun. So, you know, that whole sunlight thing is odd. But I was fascinated by the fact that as they electrify countries more and more, their breast cancer rates go up.
That's amazing.
Except?
Is it disrupting cellular communication? Is it causing cell death from being out of sync? You know, not being in... I wouldn't say phase, but it's disruptive to the cellular matrix.
Yes, you hit them all. It's you're a good doctor. It's you know your stuff. It's what happens is it disrupts the mechanism inside the cell, and apoptosis, where it eliminates damaged cells, it disrupts that big time, and it also disrupts the immune system. And so the immune system, the immune surveillance, where our body looks for abnormal cells and removes them. I mean, thousands an hour removed. Without that system, we would be riddled with cancer at an early age. That's all compromised now. And then because you have the low vitamin D, you have the forever chemicals, you have the lack of exercise, you have the lack of sleep, you have the very poor nutrition, and then you have exposure to all of these seed oils and all these chemicals in our foods. I mean, in my opinion, RFK's got it all right. That's, some of the stuff he likes, I don't like at all, but all the medical stuff he does, I like, and all the farming stuff he does, I like. When he starts talking about getting rid of the combustion engines, internal combustion engines, I have to differ with him on that. But overall, I mean, he's a brave guy. He's a man of his principles. You know, I mean, I'm a Republican, but I like him. You know, you got to hand him that. He's never changed. He's been there. He's outspoken. He's willing to go as far as to change parties to do what he wants for the people. They were killing him in those congressional hearings, but why would you be against? What are you against removing chemicals from our foods? We have thousands that the Europeans don't have. They don't allow. Why would you be against that? You may not like the guy. You may be pissed they change parties, but come on. So I'm hoping that a lot of good comes of that.
I want to get your take on this, because he was in Steak and Shake yesterday or a couple of days ago and talked about they're going to use beef tallow, I think.
Yes, tallow.
Or they're making their fries. What do you think of that?
Perfect. That's I wrote an article on that, seed oils, about 3 weeks ago on my Substack. And I talk about it. That's the safe things you want. You want lard. You want tallow. You want ghee. You want butter, butter. You want all of those things because they're great. They're healthy saturated fats. And that's what McDonald's cooked with, that stuff, until the late 70s. Mm-hmm. And then they started changing over because it was cheaper. But these seed oils are a nightmare. I mean, they're exposing us to all kinds of things that our body can't process, and it throws us off. Normally, we have a omega-6 to omega-3 level ratio of, 2 to 1, maybe, normally. Now it's 20 to 1 with omega-6s above omega-3s. And so omega-6s are pro-inflammatory. I mean, you need some, because you need some inflammation in your body, but you don't need a lot. And when we're in this pro-inflammatory state because of all these seed oils, we wind up causing chronic inflammation. But it destroys the mitochondria. It's a toxin for mitochondria, and so it damages the mitochondria. And as you know, mitochondria you need for energy production. So you have all these people with chronic fatigue, and then you wind up with these chronic illnesses because your body doesn't have the energy to fight it off and to fight off the inflammation. So you wind up with hypertension and obesity and, dyslipidemia and diabetes and prediabetes and metabolic syndrome, all the things we're riddled with. I mean, with 70% of American adults are obese and 33% of the kids are, that's a disaster. No. And this is the sickest generation ever coming up.
We're on more meds too, and it's not working.
Right. So,
I mean, from the standpoint of what you said initially with insulin resistance and all of the inflammatory changes that happen, obviously you got to change your diet, but what about things like intermittent fasting, where you can turn that clock into your favor? So you're actually promoting, reduction of inflammation, getting rid of sick and dying cells, insulin sensitivity coming back. Are those things that people can actually do? I mean, you just have to stop eating. You don't have to buy anything. You don't have to go to a gym.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I have a handout for intermittent fasting I give to patients. I hand that out 10 times a day. Just saves me the trouble going through it all again. But it's, but intermittent fasting is, as a functional medicine doctor, I always try to think back how we evolved. This is the human body evolved for a reason, and the systems that we have are there for a reason. For example, our inability to produce vitamin C. Every species in the world, every animal in the world produces vitamin C except a fruit bat. Yeah, the fruit bat, I think there's one other thing, hamster, I think, and us. And we can't make vitamin C. Every other animal makes it. I think because we, and no one knows why, but the presumption is because we grew up, we evolved from Africa in an environment that was tropical, loaded with fruit and vegetables, late, you know, just bursting with vitamin C. So we didn't need it. And that was the reason we lacked the development. But at that time, no one ate three meals a day. You know, cavemen didn't eat three meals a day. You know, people in the jungles of Africa didn't do that either. And there was always periods of starvation. And there was always periods of food scarcity. And so our bodies are designed not to have this constant influx of food. And so instead, we eat three meals and we snack. I mean, it couldn't be worse. I mean, our bodies never get a chance. We're constantly producing insulin, like you said. And that insulin leads to insulin resistance. And so fasting of all types is extremely healthy for you. It allows you to eliminate a lot of waste. It allows your body to take a rest. You don't have to constantly assimilate food. I mean, think about it. All that food has to be first broken down in your gut by probiotic bacteria and then absorbed and then moved to your liver by the portal vein. And then the liver, it has to be transformed into stuff you can use. And, you know, that takes a lot of energy. And, but still, we're eating so much energy in the form of fats, proteins, and carbs that we have this excess. So you get fatty liver, you get obesity, it stores it as fat because it has nothing else to do with it because the body's thinking, I'm eating good now, but there's starvation coming.
Someone
pack it in. Yeah. And so the body wisely, you know, we've developed that for, you know, millions of years. And so that's the thing it's used to. So it says, I'm getting food now. I'm going to take it. I'm going to store it as fat because I'm going to be starving in a few weeks. I'm going to need this. And so the key thing with intermittent fasting is you got to be good about not, I tell patients, say you eat dinner at lunch at noon, dinner at roughly 6 o'clock. You try to make both low carb if you can. But between 6 p.m. and noon the next day, which is 18 hours, you don't eat a thing. You drink all the water you want. I want them to hydrate themselves. Mm-hmm. But you don't eat a thing. You could have black coffee in the morning. That doesn't affect it. But you can't put sugar in it. You can't put cream in it. Yeah. You know? Mm-hmm. And that works really well because if you don't provide your body with any fuel, it has no source but to look for a fuel source. And it goes to fat first because fat has 9 calories per gram as opposed to carbs and protein, which are 4.5. It saves protein for last because that's the most valuable thing in the body. And so everything's made of protein that's vital. And so it muscles and stuff, it saves all that. But you lose fat first, which is great.
So do you need to have 18 hours or is there a minimum intermittent fasting window that you should fast?
No, it doesn't have to be 18, but the longer the better.
Okay.
You know, it's some people can't do it, you know, it's but, you know, I encourage them in the beginning because it sounds much more daunting than it is. Once you get used to it, it only takes about 2 or 3 days, patients tell me, and they're fine with it. First couple of days. And sometimes I'll give them a little phentermine just to, as an appetite suppressant, just to make it easier for them in the first week or so. And then once they get into it, I withdraw it. That's an old drug. It works good. It was part of that fen-phen. Remember the fen-phen craze?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And once again, here was another thing, poor science. They took people after they were on fen-phen and said, oh, look at this. You've got a heart murmur. You didn't have one before. Well, we didn't know if you had one before. We found one now. we got to ban this. I said, but there's no control. You didn't check them before.
Don't you love the science, how it comes out? And then years later, oh, our mistake.
Right. I mean, that was the rate. People were doing great on that combination. Weight was melting off them, you know? It was fascinating.
Stop eating. I mean, you didn't have to take it forever either. So, my other question, and I actually listened to a video, it was really fascinating about burning ketones as your fuel source. And they took people who had mental memory issues and they did intermittent fasting and they got better on cognitive tests because the brain was able to function better.
Because what are ketones? They're medium chain triglycerides. So that's what happens. It's a fat that brain can use as the fuel. That was the backup system I was talking about. That's why. You know, it helps cognitive function, even in normal people. It makes you sharper. You know, you have a high, you know, what do you call it? Blank in there. Ketogenic diet. Mm-hmm. You know, it's great for you. You know, fat's not the enemy. In fact, I go out of my way to eat as much fat as I can. I'll give you an example.
Tell us, because not all fat is created equal, right?
Right. Not all fat is created equal, but there's very fat and protein your body craves. I don't eat lunch. I eat, and every day I get breakfast catered by pharmaceutical companies to the office. And so I get, it's one of the last benefits every day. Lunch too, but I don't eat lunch. The girls get it. Because I'm one of the last guys around. It's independent. They come to me because there's no, so I'm feasting here, but I've been doing that for decades. But anyway, I eat the same thing every morning practically. Occasionally I get something different, but I usually get 4 eggs, bacon, rye toast, and a large coffee with cream, but no sugar. I only eat the yolks of the eggs, and I eat the bacon, and I drink the coffee, and I have a couple pieces of toast with butter on it. Now, you would think I don't avoid fat anywhere else on my diet when I have dinner. I ran a fasting lipid on myself last month or 2 months ago. Total cholesterol, 156. Triglycerides, 98. LDL, 60. You know, I mean, my numbers were outstanding. You know, it's shocking, but it's not what they tell us. It's the problem. It's the processed foods, and it's all the other junk we eat. You know, I'm not even a big guy into cholesterol. I don't think, you know, Dr. Keyes, who did the studies in the 50s, was a scamster. He studied 28 countries. He got rid of 21 because they didn't match his data. I mean, come on. You know, and that was the whole cholesterol hoax started there. And that's been a billion-dollar industry for pharmaceutical companies. You know, it's statins suck. Statins cause myalgias, and they lower COQ10, and they cause dementia eventually. They cause all kinds of problems, depression.
Yeah, I have to ask you this then. How low? Because I've seen patients where their cholesterol levels are down in like the 180, 170, and they're trying to get it lower. Is there a barrier to when, you know, of course, 300 cholesterol is not going to be great, but is there a low end that you really shouldn't go below?
Well, you know, your body needs cholesterol. Vitamin D is made from cholesterol. You know, in fact, sunbathing lowers your cholesterol level because they use it to make your sunlight exposure to your skin. As you make vitamin D, and it makes it from cholesterol. And so you can lower it a little bit that way, not significantly, but enough. But you need cholesterol for all the steroid hormones, all your sex hormones. Everything comes from cholesterol. And you need fats and saturated fats and all kinds of fats for your brain health. The brain is fat and protein. It's a lot of fat in the brain. And so I see a lot of people on these low cholesterol diets who have develop odd things, eczema, psoriasis. They get terrible skin problems because it's not healthy for your skin. So I put them on. I like krill oil better than fish oil. They're both good. Don't get me wrong. They're both good. And I use the pharmaceutical stuff in some patients, the Vazkepa and Lovazza. But it's just great stuff. But the krill oil I like better because it has astaxanthin in it. And that's a really strong antioxidant. It's like 600 times stronger than vitamin C. And that is great for you. That's why it's red, krill oil. Astaxanthin comes from the food chain, and the bacteria that make it, as it goes up the food chain, you'll see it in shrimp, for example. That's why they're pink. You'll see it in salmon. You'll see it in lobsters. That's why they get the red and the pink. It's from the astaxanthin. And that's why krill oil is red. But krill oil crosses the blood-brain barrier, which fish oil doesn't.
Oh.
So I like it in depressed patients. I give them that. It helps them. Sleep helps them a lot, too. But also lately, I found a really interesting thing. I've been always fascinated with hypothyroidism. It's extremely underdiagnosed in the United States because most doctors foolishly just do a TSH or thyroid stimulating hormone test. and that comes out normal, they're like, you don't have it. Where they don't test T4 free and total and T3 free and total. Mm-hmm. And T3 is the active one. And sometimes patients lack the enzyme to convert T4 to T3. But all that being said, for the last 6 months or so, I've been treating patients who have depression and chronic fatigue, and they have all the symptoms of hypothyroidism. They're constipated, they have swelling around their eyes, their skin is dry, they're exhausted, they're cold all the time, they have cold intolerance, they can't warm up. I run their thyroids, they're normal. So I started putting them on a natural thyroid, NP, or Armour thyroid, which is the... Most people use Synthroid, which stands for synthetic thyroid. I'm not a big synthetic guy. So I like the natural stuff, but it also has T4 and T3. But it's great. But I give them a low dose of that, and I watch their pulse, and I watch their body temperature come up, and I use that because that's what they used to use in the old days before we had Quest. Mm-hmm. They would use body temperature. That's how they diagnosed hypothyroidism because it controls your metabolism. If your body temperature is low, it means you're not burning. That furnace isn't burning what you need to create it. And man, I cannot believe how good it's working.
Really? How fast did it kick in?
Some people in like a month. You know, it's working really good. And usually it works pretty good, pretty fast. You know, it gives them back energy. I keep doing it. I keep raising it until I get their body temperature up to normal, as long as mm-hmm. they don't get tachycardic with it. Mm-hmm. So I have them do a basal pulse before they even get out of bed. Just check your pulse there and bring me a list of them. And I keep an eye on their labs also. But I let it run a little high. I'm not too worried about it. But, you know, it helps depression big time. And it really makes a difference in people. It's like an awakening for a lot of them. You know, they're like, wow. You know, some patients just can't please. I had one the other day say, why did you do this sooner?
Wow.
You can't win, Elena. You know how it is.
I know.
This woman, she's happy as hell on one hand, you know, can't believe her life is back, and then chews me out because I didn't do it sooner, even though her endocrinologist didn't figure it out.
Well, that's a whole nother specialty. They don't seem to have much facility with natural, you know, thinking outside the box at all, which is interesting.
It amazes me. They're not even interested. I call them and talk to them about it, I could tell they're like, this is a one-off. You know, this isn't real. I just could tell they're skeptical. And it both hurts my feelings and it pisses me off at the same time. You
know? I mean, as a new specialist of any kind, if someone was going to give me a new way to treat my patients and have them do well, I'd be all over it.
Right.
I don't understand. That's the whole point of treat your patient till they're better and see somebody else and fix them.
Right.
But that's not what they do. It's scary.
I know. I read through every consult I send patients out for because I'm trying to glean little things I can learn from it. Little tricks. What'd he do? Why'd he give him this? Or why'd she give him that? And, you know, I want to learn from it. I'm an open book. I'm totally open. Teach me. Show me. Show me something I don't know. I never fake, you know, some people, I know that. You don't know that. I never say that when I don't know something.
Nobody knows everything.
I'm
but it's the fact that we're students.
Tell me about it.
That's what makes it fun. It's
you
like
and
this
I
investigative
between,
approach, right? Exactly. But, you know, if the patients now, I think, and you're blessed, you have a patient group, it seems to me, that are very savvy about learning about their body, what makes it work. But I think the patients need to have a sea change in what they expect from the healthcare system. The people who just want to give me a pill and make me better, I really don't enjoy that interaction. But the ones who want to fix the problem, understand it, and then make changes so they can be free, that's a joy patient to treat.
That's what makes it. That's what it's all about for people like us. Mm-hmm. We're doctors for the right reason, you know. And for us, nothing makes me happier than a patient going back. God, I feel better. Exactly. You know, thank you. You know, that was great. You know, getting back to the microplastics, there's some things you can do. You know, I've done this in my office. I eliminated all plastic glasses and straws. We have glass straws and glass plastic glass glasses now, so I don't drink out of anything from plastic as much as I can. Mm-hmm. And so you could do that. I would not drink bottled water. Whatever you do, I take first of all, it's a ripoff. Just use tap water. Put it in a ceramic or a metal container. There's plenty of those around now that you can use. I would unfortunately limit your shellfish consumption.
That's sad. Yeah,
I love shell. I'm a fish guy. I love all kinds of fish. You know? In fact, there's fish waiting for me in a little while. But you know, check your health products and make sure they're not from China, because they still use the microbeads there, or even from Europe. You know, avoid buying clothes made of non-synthetic material. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, that, you know, it's going to give off fibers and stuff to you, you know. Air dry your clothes if you can, you know. I'll give you an example of microplastics, glitter. Think of glitter as a plastic, not a microplastic, but think of glitter. And if you want to just think in your mind of microplastics, think of glitter 10 times smaller. You ever spill glitter on something? How hard it is to get it up?
Yeah.
Right. It's everywhere. You can't get rid of it. You're like, no. Oh my God. But think of it inside your body, what it's doing. You know, that type of thing. But, you know, try to get your packaging away from food. Don't use it like that. You know, trying to eliminate. I got rid of all the Tupperware, changed it all to glass. However, most of those, they sell them still with plastic tops. I don't know why. The rest of it's glass, but it is better than nothing, you know. Try not to microwave things that are plastic. Another source that people aren't aware of are cutting boards. They're using polyethylene cutting boards and polypropylene. That gives off a ton of plastic as you cut through it. Use wooden cutting boards. Get rid of those. You know, or buy your fresh food in bulk if you can. There'll be less packaging with it. You know, I told him, one of my best friends, a dentist, and I told him this, and he really got bummed out. Dental floss, huge source of microplastics.
Seriously?
Yes, dental floss. Wow. I know.
So you get the non-waxed, or you got to do something like a water pick?
I think you have to use a water pick or something like that. But that was a bummer seeing that one. But if you can use filters, it has to be 1/10 of a micron size, and you could use a filter for that. And that'll work. That'll filter out microplastics. I'm actually working on a patent for that with a friend of mine. But I think because you can use that, and there's even filters you could put on your water system in your house that will remove it. They have one called TAP, TAPP2. That's a biodegradable smart water filter, and it'll filter out microplastics. Or you could put one on your house. They have it's called KIND, KIND. That's a whole house filter. You have to get a plumber, I guess, to put that as your water comes into your house. So, you know, there's ways you can mitigate it. It's, you know, but you have to, once again, you've got to be your own, you know, advocate and work really hard to do this stuff. But I think it'll pay off, because I'm really freaked out about the long-term consequences we'll all be facing.
You know, in the minute that we have left, I want to make sure people know how to read, buy your books, and read what you write on your Substack page.
Yeah. Substack, for those of you who don't know it, is a non-censored forum. And so there's a lot of non-censored political thought on there, and a whole lot of non-censored medical thought on there. Because, you know, if I put stuff on like this on YouTube, they'll take it down. They'll take it down and send me a nasty letter and threaten me, you know, which is incredible in itself. That'll take a whole other show to talk about that. So you go to YouTube, Substack, to Medical Underground. That's me. Or we just go to medicalunderground@substack.com. That'll bring you right to it. I write articles like this every week. You'll see an article on microplastics about 2 months ago on there. It's free. It's nice of you to contribute, but it's free. that's a great source, because not only do I tell you what the problem is for each thing, but I tell you various ways to treat it without prescription stuff for all the problems that develop. And I talk about everything. We have to do a show on cancer one of these days, because there's a whole, have you been following the ivermectin, fenbendazole?
Yep. Yep.
Yeah, that's fascinating stuff. I mean, that's, I'm going to write a Substack on that. I wrote one about a year ago about it, but I got to do an updated one. But so you can buy my books on Amazon. Just type my name in, Dr. Ralph LaGuardia, like the airport, L-A, capital G-U-A-R-D-I-A. And I have the Doomsday Book of Medicine, the Bible of Alternative Medicine, and Infected Secrets from the Medical Underground. I teach you how to treat all medical problems from head to toe without pharmaceuticals.
Dr. Ralph, thank you so much for joining me. I think we have a title for our next show because it should be about cancer since it's exploding. Yeah.
Yes, for a lot of the reasons we talked about.
Exactly. So once again, thank you for joining me, and thank you everybody for living in the solution.
Thank you for having me as a guest.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.